this is how I believe, okay? I'm from the old school.
Old school. Cenk Uygur, Ben Mankiewicz, old school, old school. So lots to discuss tonight. And there's something new on old school that I have to explain right now. Programming notes are always super fun. So first of all, of course, we're sponsored by shoptyt.com, where you will not be able to find this t-shirt, okay?
Because what's happening on that t-shirt?
That t-shirt is, if you remember, the sword in the darkness, the watchers on the wall. Okay, so that's from the last drive we did. Well, we have a new membership drive. So people who gave in the last drive got this t-shirt, and we said they'd never come back, and it didn't come back. Okay, so we're not playing around. You understand what I'm saying? So if we do a t-shirt in this drive, understand that
it will be a different t-shirt.
It'll be different, and you will never get a chance to buy it again. Now, it doesn't even exist yet, so, and probably one of you guys will draw it. As was the case with this one, a viewer drew it. And so I'm going to tell you about the membership drive in a second. But whenever I see anybody in this shirt, I know that they, in a sense, help build a company. So one of the drives, we built a studio. Another one, we hired reporters. And this one is to try to get to 100,000 members so that we are an immovable rock and that we fight for progressives, and especially because 2020 is coming. I think we did some pretty good work in 2018.
It's been pushed back.
Oh, it has?
2020.
Okay. The three-eyed raven did not tell me that.
Yeah, it's I think 2023.
Is it?
It's coming, yeah. Well, yeah. Or what was 2023.
Well, you know what they say.
That will now be 2026.
Yeah, right. Well, what they say, hindsight is 2023.
That's right. They do say that. They do say that. Yeah. I never really understood that expression until now.
Oh yeah, that's right. It seemed a little weird, right? Yeah. Until now. Okay. So we have a lot of fun things on the show. We're going to in a minute discuss, of course, what is the least American season of the four seasons? Which one is the least American? It actually
turns
out, well, that's a good answer for a different question. But it turns out there is actually a clear answer, and we'll see if Ben can get that clear answer. We might have to dip into Trump because he again is at it in maniacal ways just before this show began. But before I get into any of that, so I want to explain, we have gone public and private.
Craig, can
on
I
old
get
school.
A piece of tape before we continue?
Yeah, okay. This is the kind of stuff that happens on old school. So we have changed our minds approximately 78 times on whether any portion of this show is going to be public. It's usually for members, and members get it live, and a lot of you are watching now and notice that we started late as usual. So that's also an old school tradition. But we're now putting up basically the first half hour for free on YouTube. But it's not just a half an hour show, it's about an hour and a half show, and members get the whole show, and you'll already have seen that in the pre-roll to this, where I'm wearing a suit and all that stuff. But I just wanted you guys to know, both the folks that are watching and that are not members, and the members, that from now on we'll be putting up the first half an hour or so on YouTube on the weekends. Okay, so a lot of you are watching now that are not members.
So the first half hour of old school, we've had so many conversations about what to do with old school. I'm sorry, actually, I haven't had any, but nonetheless,
so I was like, only on air.
I like finding out with the rest of you. So the first half hour, which is seldom the best half hour, will be made free.
It is what it is. For example, the first couple of minutes here, useless.
pretty much a waste of time. Requests for tape, chewing some food, going over some membership rules.
Because we eat between the shows.
That's
okay. Anyways, last thing on this. We're going to put up a number here that is relevant to the members because they're the only ones watching live, because we've been trying to get to 29,000 today, 29,000 in our membership drive. Those of you who are not members will be seeing this days later, but this will be a fun part. Oh, no, it's not public. Anyway, there won't be any fun part for you guys. We do keep it real on old school. And are we going to talk about the thing on my lip? Yes, that's another thing we're going to discuss in a little bit.
It was only a few weeks ago that we talked about the thing on my lip.
That's right, yeah. Man. There's a lot of lip talk, a lot of loose lips on the. oh no, does that mean our ship is sinking? All right. Membership drive update for the day. We were trying to get to 29,000. Did we get there? Can I see the number? Ba-da-ba-da. Wait a minute. I think I actually have it.
You're a bitch.
That was not. That is definitely not what I intended. All right, let me try that again. Hold on, hold on. There we go. Okay, all right. So 29,047. We did reach 29,000. Anna says 30,000. She says we got to get to 30,000. She said it by the first day, which was impossible. This is the second day, and 29,000 was impossible.
It was it's a good start.
It's an amazing start.
Yeah.
So thank you to all of you.
We were like 1,000 yesterday, right?
Yeah, 1,500. it's been an amazing couple of days. Thank you to all of you guys. And if you're not already a member, make Progressive Media possible and get this fun show. And by the way, the archives for the old school goes back years. You're gonna love those archives. We're now. I can curse. This will have to be bleeped out later. We're not. Fucking around, okay?
What does it have to be bleeped out on? The version that
the YouTube version.
The free half hour version?
Yeah, and plus there's another version. Anyway, who cares? Super boring. Anyway, for the members, you get all the curses too. So that's fun. TYT.com/join. All right, let's move on. So we got Trump. There's so many wonderful things today. Also, a secret state among the 50 states that where you're going to go, no, nobody wants to live there. Wait a minute. Should people live there? So that's coming up in a little bit as well, okay? So by the way, in old school, we measure time in different metrics. So when I say a little bit, I probably mean an hour and 15 minutes from now. Okay, just giving everybody a heads up since we're starting something new today. All right, so without further ado, let's see if you can guess.
The most
un-American season. Well, and it's, to be fair, it's by default. There's nothing particularly un-American about it. It just loses to the other seasons.
This is in your opinion, and I don't mean to say, obviously, there's no conversation that I like less. I had one at the Telluride Film Festival. Then when you say an opinion as fact and someone joins it, retorts that, hey man, it's just opinion. Everyone's entitled to an opinion. I'm like, hey man, you just made this a very uninteresting conversation. Like, I got it. Everyone's entitled to an opinion. That's not news. It's only interesting if you state your opinion as fact, as if it's a bold declaration.
Look, if we get to 100,000 members, I should make my first promise now. We will start a show called Strong Opinions with Jake Huger.
Strong Opinions.
But it would fill in the blank with Ben Mankiewicz.
Created by Rachel Hamilton. So is this your take, your declaration, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, but you're stating the most obvious things in the world.
I just wondered if, like, it was read somewhere or it was sort of a group think. Like, did people huddle?
No one outside of me, but it is obvious.
Okay, I think it is obvious. I'm not quite there yet, although I'm certainly influenced by whether you use the term fall or autumn. Because I think if we use the term autumn, then that is in the running. But let's go with fall.
Okay.
And so I don't think it could be fall because fall is a time that you would think is just, as I do, the most glorious time. Football begins. It's a new beginning. You can tell me the year starts in January. That's nonsense. The year starts in the fall.
Okay. So far, ding, 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 100% correct. And I feel like in an old school episode 3.5 years ago, we already had this conversation. That one's easy. That's a layup. Fall is the most American season.
Unless you call it autumn, in which case we got to reorder everything.
Yeah, in which case you say, welcome to America. Right. And here we call it fall, and we call football the sport where we actually hit each other.
That's right.
And not kick the ball around until we get to a 1-0 result on the pitch.
That's right.
Okay.
So fall is not the most un-American season. Right. That's obvious. I don't think you could argue that summer is an un-American season because it's effing summer. Mm-hmm. Summer, get out in summer. You look for it. You have some great, your greatest experience in summer. Either traveling with your family, traveling with your friends. Summer love. There's just something about summer that even now at our advanced age, like my daughter started kindergarten today. Today is her first day at real school, and it was an experience. It was the end of summer, so even her summer, which is not the same as my summer because she doesn't have anything to do and still manages to complain.
God, how great were those summers.
Right, and because you just said how great were those summers, I don't think you can call summer on America.
Ding, ding, ding. Continue to be 100% right. I believe the last time we played this game, summer came in second. Not really a close second, but there was a discussion. There was a discussion because 4th of July is in the summer. Right. I mean, it doesn't get more American than that.
Right, that's right.
There's a lot of flags around.
Yeah, okay. Labor Day, summer. Memorial Day, technically not summer, but summer.
Yeah, Labor Day, technically summer, but not summer. So it kind of balances out.
That's true. Okay. Labor Day, technically fall. Memorial Day, I mean, Labor Day, essentially fall. Memorial Day, essentially summer.
Right. Also, in the camp for summer coming in number two, Hot dogs.
Sure. Barbecues.
Barbecues. Mm-hmm. No, clearly the second most American season.
Vacationing.
Ah, yeah. No. This is no break. Look, if you haven't agreed so far, there's something wrong with you.
Well, you're not American.
You might think you're an American, but you're not.
So then we're down to winter and spring.
Yes, we are. Right. See, now and it's you see how it's going to become. Okay.
Uh-huh. It's tricky because winter has a Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever else thing you want to celebrate. Yeah. That's family coming together. It's a great time. You're not saying that anything in these other times, there aren't American moments in whatever is the most un-American season.
Absolutely.
I think
it's a loss by default. That's
right.
All.
That's right. That's what you did say that. So I think that because, especially for those of us who grew up back east, when spring comes, you sense, dare I say it, some degree of hope.
And is that blue you see, Ben?
Yeah, so that we've come out of a winter of short days, and short days blow, right?
Yeah.
Nighttime at 4:42, that doesn't interest anybody. And it's just too cold in the morning. And so when spring comes and you get those first day, oh, it's 52 degrees today, it's sunny, something's happening. Something is happening. And for me, the baseball, they go to spring training, you sense there's a... But then there are allergies in spring.
But then the allergies.
So it's tough because I like winter.
It could be the cup in front of you.
I like winter. I like the snow. I like the cold. I don't like the bitter cold. But I like the cold. But I don't see how the emergence of sun and the emergence of a possibility of a 9-month run of American greatness, three straight months. I think spring is more American than winter, and I will say that winter is the most un-American by default of all the seasons.
Yeah. See, this is where the great American controversy begins. Okay, for those of you who use the word autumn, it is a controversy. Because I had it at neck and neck between winter and spring.
Well, clearly it is.
Yeah. But I kept thinking, what is American about spring? And I was like, cherry blossoms in Washington.
That's Japanese.
Yeah, it's almost literally Japanese. So no, not really. Spring training, I hadn't thought of. So that's a good
baseball
case.
And the the promise of summer, the promise of something better. Yeah. And America is about hope. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, it's morning in America. I get it. Yeah. I totally get it. And I think there's a fair case to be made. But I just thought Christmas was too overwhelmingly American. I voted winter third season, spring by default fourth season. Let's just focus on Christmas for a second. Because is there anything more American than Christmas? Because, like, you could say Thanksgiving, because that's just literally an American holiday. You could say 4th of July. No, but you can't say 4th of July, because 4th of July, everybody has a 4th of July for them. Like, you would think it's Cinco de Mayo for the Mexicans. It's not. That's a head fake. That is not their Independence Day. Okay. But everybody has an Independence Day, right? Nobody has a Thanksgiving, so that's a good argument for Thanksgiving. But Christmas, with its absurd, wonderful capitalism.
Yeah, I tell you why. It's absurd. And I no longer find it wonderful because I find it crass commercialism. Yeah. And the commercialism bugs me. So yeah, I suppose that's American.
But it is over the top American.
Well, it's consumerism, but it's unpleasant. And it's not us at our best. So it really depends on what the...
Are hot dogs really us at our best?
Kind of, yeah. But I'm going to stick with spring because I think hope and the emerging possibility of what's to come. By the way, there would always be a 9-month run away from the whatever the worst thing is, so it doesn't really hold. But I like that but warmth and possibility come in the spring. And you and I both agree that I think Thanksgiving is more American than Christmas. And they're in that same block of time. But as we know, Thanksgiving is the fall, Christmas is the winter.
That's right. So here, we're going to have a super fun at this point, not just regular fun, because I'm going to direct you to a poll that doesn't exist and might never exist. Later, we might or might not put up a poll on tyt.com/season where you will get to vote on the least American season. We will not even put summer and fall on.
They're not in the running.
Because they're
too American.
Because if you think it's one of those seasons, I'm not interested in your vote. Okay? So the only two choices will be spring and winter. Yeah. And you, American people, will get to decide what is the least American.
If you think either that summer or fall is the least American season, you should consider yourself, I don't know, a disenfranchised voter in North Carolina or Ohio or Wisconsin. We're not interested in your vote.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
We
think
might
of us as Scott Walker.
And Chris Kobach.
We don't want you to vote. Your vote doesn't count.
You know, you want to vote for fall being the least American season? Sorry, I'm going to need to see some voter ID.
I'm going to need to see some ID. Right. You might as well have been convicted of a misdemeanor in Florida in 1974. You're not voting.
Okay, that's really sad, but true. But weirdly amusing at this moment. Yeah. Okay. So especially if you're watching this later on Sunday, I guess, when we put up the free version. By then, the poll might exist.
Yeah.
So go to TV.
By the way, it might exist, and the voting might have been closed off.
Yeah. Because we will not let you vote. TYT.com/season if we get to it. But I have circled it on my piece of paper, which has increased the chances of it coming to fruition. Okay. Well, that was obviously the most important topic. The rest is just fluff.
Right.
So,
did you have a fight or a wrestling match or something with Michael Smirkonish?
No, but I challenged him to one.
A wrestling match. Is that right?
No, but that would have been hilarious.
Or just a fight, just like a bear.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what it was. So, you guys know Smirkonish. He's on CNN these days, right?
He hops around. Yeah, but he has a nightly show on POTUS radio which is politics radio on the. On Sirius XM.
Did he mention me wrestling him, or did it just pop it into your head?
No, I listened to POTUS, Sirius 124. I mean, I listened to Springsteen, Howard Stern, baseball, and POTUS radio. Those are like my only things I ever go
to. You know what? Yeah. There could be a good poll in that one. What's most American out of those?
No one listens to POTUS radio. I mean, no one. Like, I mean, everything on Sirius gets like no ratings, except I imagine Howard and music. I mean, people listen to music.
Yeah, right? And the Young Turks when we were on.
Right, but are we on it now anymore?
No, we're not.
Okay. So
you can say whatever you want.
Yeah, but. So I just mean like I can't.
Just kidding, I love my brothers and sisters.
Well, I think that POTUS radio, I wasn't trying to explain it. My wife totally agreed. We drove back from a film festival back home. We had a 7-hour car trip and I was explaining that POTUS radio is the definition of the establishment. There is nothing more establishment than POTUS radio. You get some reliable information sometimes, but if you, and don't get me wrong, it isn't a powerful part of the establishment. It just, if you want to know what the establishment is thinking, join the 38 people listening to POTUS radio and you'll realize that they are getting that.
100% plus, there is one person that listens to POTUS outside of you.
Michael Schur.
Of course.
Well, it's good. It's worth listening to. I mean, it's engaging. They have some different shows. I particularly enjoy the Press Pool with Julie Mason. She couldn't be more establishment. But Smirkonish is on, and he is unbelievably established. So I like listening to it because you get a sense. But I think even for the establishment, he got something very wrong today related to the president. He put out a poll. So it was two things. You mentioned the president, and he had a poll. He has a poll every day, I guess. And his poll was, will the Woodward book, Fear, right, that's what it's called?
Yep.
Move the needle. And he made an significantly, I think, which is a relevant adverb, because I think it will move the needle a little, right?
But and I have his strong opinion on that.
His argument was, no, it will not. And I don't know, no one knows, but I thought he compared it to the other guy's book. What's his name?
Wolf.
Wolf, Michael Wolf.
And MichaelWolf-Pack.com.
Right, totally. And he read some clips pretending that they were, this is the most promotion Smirkonish has ever gotten.
No, and I also love Smirkonish. Yeah. There is a bizarre Smirkonish love in the building, which makes no sense. Later I will tell you about how I threatened to wrestle him.
So he said that he read some allegations in the book and then was like, aha, those are from Michael Wolff's book. Mm-hmm. Did I trick you? I was like, good one.
You know? but that's the extent right. of the entertainment value that Smirkonish brings to the world.
So,
like, that's the most uninteresting game ever played.
Aha! Okay. I was surprised that in Woodward's book, because he was saying it was Woodward's book, that Trump called Sally Yates the C word. And I was like, I'm surprised Bob Woodward reported that. Turned out he didn't. It was in Michael Wolff's book. So, he suggested that it will not move the needle at all. We already know these allegations. Michael Wolff reported them, and it's similar. It just confirms the crazy nature of the Trump White House, which was showed up in Michael Wolff's book. And I thought, I don't know, but you're missing the point. And for the establishment radio to miss the point, they were sort of eager in the establishment once they got a hold of that little yarn to pull. He even admitted, right? Wolff did that he didn't have some stuff that he didn't write it down. I don't remember what it was, but he was easy to discredit, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that argument that Ben Shapiro is using now, well, once you find one thing that can be discredited, then then all 10,000 allegations in the book are out the window, right?
So why do you even know a Ben Shapiro argument?
I saw him on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
So but Bob Woodward is not Michael Wolff. And Bob Woodward is revered. And I don't use the establishment as negatively as you do, but we both know it's a thing, right? And Bob Woodward is the definition of the establishment, and he's done brilliant.
Now he is,
done brilliant work in many often, and he's a relevant voice who should not be ignored. But so it is 50 billion times harder for everybody at CNN, at MSNBC, even at Fox News, at BuzzFeed, at every relevant website to dismiss Bob Woodward. And therefore, because they won't be able to dismiss it as easy, it is much more likely than Michael Wolff to have an effect on Trump. Whether it will move the needle significantly, whatever you derm, but I suspect that it will. I don't think that means he's leaving office anytime soon because of it, but I consider it it is very different than Michael Wolff's book.
So we already have, there's so many things to update you guys on. We already have our first vote in tyt.com/season, which doesn't even exist.
For a poll that doesn't exist.
That's right. I will get to that later.
Okay. Maybe.
In an hour and 20 minutes. And it's a famous person voting.
You want to just get to it now?
No. I will get to Smirkonish wrestling, but I have to address the things that I've said. One, it will move the needle. Wrong. Two, it has already moved the needle because I think it prompted Mike Pence to write that op-ed today. Did you read?
I didn't. I just had somebody tell me about it on the phone.
No, not even the op-ed, which is amazing and will move the needle by itself. I'll get back to why the needle's being moved and who's moving it in a sec. But the conspiracy theory that it was Mike Pence.
Oh, I thought it was just a joke by you. No, that's an actual conspiracy.
Yeah, it is, because there was a word used in the article that is
mother. Was it mother?
And then the article ended strangely with saying, I got to get back because there's a woman in the room and I got to go and find my wife.
I got to get out of this room.
So there's a football game I got to walk out of disingenuously. That's how it ended. So I guess that was a clue. No, seriously, there was a word that people don't normally use. I actually don't think it's that unique a word, but lodestar. That John McCain was our lodestar or something along those lines, right? And people, because everybody's now a detective, but like a good one, I would argue.
They looked up for other people who'd used that word.
So they immediately Googled each like senior Trump official to see if they used the word lodestar. And there is one guy who uses it consistently.
Mike Pence.
Mike Pence.
So Mike Pence's speechwriter likes that word, and Pence likes that word.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a great point, by the way, that it's probably a speechwriter.
Well, I mean, and I imagine if it's Pence, you know, I mean, he probably didn't write it entirely himself.
On the other hand, Mike Pence is the kind of square that would use the word lodestar a lot.
Yeah.
He'd use a whole load of lodestar.
You would never use the word lodestar writing. And that sounded like people have speechwriters and they work with the guy making the speech. That's not like Mike Pence is an idiot, can't write his own speech.
Yeah.
But you would never use the word lodestar if you were a speechwriter. A good one with a relationship with the person whom you're writing for, which obviously Pence would have. You're not some hack you just brought in. Like, you would never use that word unless the person used the word. Like, it was right, not somebody right. You just be, hey, I had you write, Jack, read Lodestar. He'd be like, no.
Yeah, that's yeah, right. Yeah. So, when my speechwriter was writing this show, he put no Lodestars in there because I don't normally say Lodestar.
Right, yeah.
Okay. So, that's a super fun conspiracy theory. But anyway, back to why the needle has been moved. So Woodward's book comes out. It causes a senior administration official to write the most unprecedented, shocking op-ed I have ever seen. Right. And I know we use that a lot in the Trump era because everything has been the shocking, most shocking, unprecedented obscene, thing right. we'd ever seen. Right. And they're not exaggerations. They are true by a mile, by a country mile. Okay, they are the lodestar of truth.
What are the lodestar of truth?
That half the things that happen today are the most shocking, unprecedented things that have ever happened in our lifetimes in American history.
There's a comedian called Lori Kilmartin, I think, and she's a liberal. I don't know if she's a progressive, whatever. She's on the right side of to me, right?
Okay.
But she occasionally, she does a good thing, and she just takes whatever the main story of the day, I don't know whether she does this every day or twice a week or whatever, and she just pretends that it was President Clinton who did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, President Hillary Clinton today. And so here was, you know, an anonymous high-ranking official in the Clinton administration wrote this. And you read it, and you're like, oh, she'd be impeached. Like every time she does something with this, you'd be like, holy moly, the story would never die. And yet every Trump story, and maybe it would be if Clinton did it every day too, but she wouldn't. It wouldn't. It is shocking to think about how things would be different if any of these things had been done. If Hillary Clinton threatened to fire her attorney general for not, as you tweeted about, for not bending investigations
to help Democrats.
To help Democrats, right?
So immediate impeachment. Immediate. Within the week. She'd be out within the week.
And I hope that I am correct in saying that I think for both of us, we would think, oh, she's crossed a line. She can't come back.
Yeah,
she's got to go.
I mean, look, there are
be time for President Kane.
Oh, okay. There are literally hundreds of those stories that would have gotten Hillary Clinton impeached. I mean, look, my favorite story that everybody forgets, and you might not even heard the story because there are so many fantastical, unbelievable stories about Trump that it might have just lost it in the waterfall. When I say, you're gonna be like, oh yeah, oh my God, that was so mental and no one ever talks about it, is when he raided his doctor's office and he had his personal security. And this was less than a year ago. This while he's
so far, I don't even know what you're talking about.
No, that's amazing, right? Yeah. See, you don't even know it.
Or I remember it.
Yeah, he had his personal security guards go over to his own doctor's office.
The crazy doctor with the long hair.
Crazy, the Bornstein or whatever, right? And break in, physically break in, move the doctor out of the way, take Trump's files, and run out.
That's definitely true?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that story.
That's mental. That's mental beyond belief. That's like, you could argue that's kind of mini Watergate because there's a break in.
Right, sure.
Right? It's of his own doctor's office. That's why the doctor turned on him. Everybody turns on him because he's so freaking crazy. So the doctor was like,
the doctor said he was healthier than any president ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that doctor then he's like, they broke into my office. They stole my files. This is so weird. Okay. By the way, of course I didn't write the letter. The letter saying Trump was the healthiest person that ever lived. He's like, of course, they wrote it in the limo. They brought it up and made me sign it when he was running.
Security guards loyal and connected to President Hillary Clinton broke into the offices of her doctor and removed all of her files amid accusations that she was whatever the thing was, that she had Parkinson's disease.
Come on. She's gone. And perhaps in prison.
Right, yeah.
Right? We forgot that story about Trump because it's full of, because it's a, It's a nonstop avalanche of insanity.
It's like, you know, it is, I mean, you know, there's a lot of comparison of things that people don't quite know enough about. And I certainly fall into this trap too, but a lot of Nixon comparisons. And Nixon was a much smarter person, much more educated person, interested in the world. But I'm not sure, there's a temptation to think that Trump is far more corrupt than Nixon. I'm not sure. Nixon was not interested in personal wealth, right? Mm-hmm. But he was interested in power and doing anything he could to keep it. I mean, the laws Nixon broke were frickin' staggering, right? Mm-hmm. And I tell the story often, but I mean, when Arthur Bremer shot George Wallace in Maryland during the 1972 campaign, Nixon told Chuck Colson to call his guys, the same kind of guys, if not the same guys who broke into the Watergate, to go to Bremer's apartment and plant McGovern literature there. Mm-hmm. So that when the FBI arrived, they'd look, it's a McGovern supporter who shot Wallace.
Uh-huh.
It's on the tapes. He just says to do it, right?
That's amazing.
And then they sent a guy, and the guy said, by the time I got there, the FBI was already there. So opportunity lost.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Nixon was run out of office because he was, in a sense, like Trump, a career criminal.
He was a career criminal.
But almost all of his criminality is centered around politics. Whereas most of Trump's criminality revolved around money.
Yeah.
Now, coincidentally, like almost accidentally, I should say, it's around politics.
So there's a movie real quick coming out. You remember Inside Job, Charles Ferguson's wonderful documentary about the financial crisis? Yeah, it's really one of the great documentaries, certainly about finance there's ever been. But it really made the financial crisis understandable and cogent and pointed the finger at who the bad guys were. And then we locked them all up. He's got a new documentary. It's 4 hours and 20 minutes. It'll be, I assume, split into a couple of parts, maybe four parts. I think coming up on the History Channel.
Is it about marijuana?
It's Watergate. And it is unbelievable. And what they do that helps enormously, and I think there'll be some criticism for it, I've already heard some, is they take the Nixon tapes and they act them out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the tapes are, some of them are horrible to listen to. The audio quality is so bad. So he'll play the first line of the thing, and then he hires actors. And the actors do the scene, and he says, "Didn't change anything. I shortened sometimes, but I added nothing in the words, the lines are said, in the order they were said. This is on the tape, but you can hear it clearly."
Yeah.
So I think it's incredibly effective. And Nixon was the worst, and an unbelievable anti-Semite. And Henry Kissinger's in there, like, "Yep."
You know what? That's such a great point. I've never heard anybody make that point. Everybody makes the point that he's an anti-Semite. That's a billion percent indisputable. If you listen to the tapes, etc. But nobody ever then says, "Hey, Kissinger, fuck you for staying in that room and knowing that what kind of an anti-Semite he is." And
it is. I mean, it is. Forget the claims. They're not claims. They're truths spoken by many on the left. In this case, on the farther left than I am, and in this case, that I fully agree with. Like, if you just from a straight political point of view, you look, you know, Haldeman went to prison, Ehrlichman went to prison, John Mitchell, the attorney. I mean, John Mitchell was the attorney general and campaign chairman at the same time, briefly. And they finally quit being attorney general. And he was just a full on criminal. He was just a criminal, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's who the kind of guy Trump looks back at that story and he goes, "I need a guy like John Mitchell to be attorney general."
Yeah, but he does. Right? Yeah.
Then Kissinger was there for all of this, right? There's no suggestion that Kissinger ordered the White House cover-up of Watergate. But, I mean, he's there. We bombed two countries we had no right to bomb. We lied about Vietnam, and it was while we were losing, right? And then still, even through most of my lifetime, a belief that I was like, "Oh, we tied Vietnam," right?
Yeah.
Well, defeat.
Yeah, that's funny. You know, now that you said that, it just, like, there was a flashback. And I remember thinking when I was young, "Oh, we tied Vietnam."
No, we lost.
Like, now I know we lost.
Right.
And I don't know when I transitioned
from
the propaganda of a tie to the reality that it was a loss.
So he lost a war. A million Vietnamese that we killed and firebombed. And right? I mean, you know, as bad as a nuclear bomb. And to say nothing of the 55,000 American troops. War started by the Democrat, Lyndon Johnson, no question. But how did Kissinger survive? Like, what did Kissinger do? Who did he know? Who loved him so much? What is so charming about this guy that he got through this hole as this fetid figure, and not just by Hillary Clinton and John Kerry and Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell and George Shultz, Secretaries of State, Jim Baker, who followed him? but by everyone, right? With the exception of the few people who call him out. And I don't mean that he should go, I'm not suggesting that we send him to The Hague and he goes to prison, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a different conversation. But how is he just sort of not persona non grata and sort of living quietly by himself on some multi-million dollar estate and nobody solicits his opinion?
So it's a great stain on not Kissinger, who is plenty stained enough, but on the establishment, that they looked at that guy and feted him, that to this day has tremendous respect in Washington.
And you see,
from Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, yeah.
So all of them are, you know, they're guilty. Kissinger was a monster in war. It was monstrous to stay in the Nixon administration. And now with this thing that I had never put those two things together. Here's Nixon, virulently anti-Semitic. This piece of shit, Kissinger, sits in there and says, oh yeah, goddamn Jews, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
And so who would respect that kind of lowlife?
Yeah, again, if you look at his career in whole, I have no doubt he was probably a good influence on Nixon. Right?
I don't know about that.
I don't know either. But you see that it still happens, and you look at David Remick at the, is it Remnick?
Remnick, I think.
At the New Yorker, and who's by all accounts, I mean, people like him, right? You know, mm-hmm. and the New Yorker's great.
Yeah.
Great, reputable, important voice. And Remnick was great immediately after the election, like recognized and put in eloquent terms the monstrosity of electing Donald Trump. But he still invited Steve Bannon. Like, it just, this is where I completely agree with you. Like, there's just something about being in that circle, you can't help it. Like, so maybe things are turning because his initial thought was, well, we're having this ideas for him and Steve Bannon will come, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'll interview him and I'm sure he thought, and I'll be tough, I'll hammer him, right? Mm-hmm. And I think he probably would have, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the correct thing is like, no, man, you don't get to come to the forums anymore. You can speak all you want. You can go around the country, your voice, you don't lose your free speech rights. You know, Malcolm Gladwell, who I really admire enormously, but he was like, hey, I thought it was ideas. You know, this was an ideas thing. Mm-hmm. How do we, if we don't listen to other people who have other ideas, then we're just, it's called a dinner party. It's a clever tweet, but mm-hmm. I don't invite Nazis to a dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Like they don't get to come.
Yeah.
And so, but the fact that it turned, like I wonder now, if things were moved forward 30 years, like I don't think Kissinger would be greeted the same way. I think there is a beginning of some sort of turn that could obviously go too far, but that where a guy like Kissinger wouldn't have the same sort of celebrated, vaunted status among elites.
Yes, there's so many things to come back to. I'll just say, even Gary Cohn had the decency to pretend resign after Charlottesville. After Charlottesville, he came and tendered his resignation, and Trump said, it's treason, I won't accept it.
Oh, right.
Okay, never mind.
Right.
And then stayed in, and then later resigned for other reasons, having nothing to do with that. But Kissinger didn't even bother to do that. So anyway, but last thing on this, because I want to get back to the non-political stuff. I think when the op-ed came out, there's two things that happened in the Woodward book. One was the op-ed. Now there's a lot of dominoes falling. Like people are like, no, this is crazy. This is a senior administration official. You know, Republicans and Trump can say fake news all along. We know in Washington it's not fake news. There's no way the New York Times is printing something saying Trump senior administration official.
And there's no way Bob Woodward made up sources. I mean, some of his sources might be wrong or have an agenda, but they said it.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's right. And so, what do you call it? So the op-ed's a bit of an earthquake. So now Trump, by the way, this is the thing I alluded to in the beginning, that right before I came on the show, I saw Trump is saying the New York Times must hand him over to the government.
Hand over the?
The person who wrote the op-ed.
For what? What would the government do?
I don't know, but that's not what we do. And it ironically proves the op-ed writer
rendition
right.
Rendition him? Take him to Egypt?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But one of the points that the administration official was making is Trump is a threat to the health of our republic.
Yeah.
And then Trump, of course, since he's one of the dumbest people in the country, unwittingly proves that guy's point by saying the newspapers must hand over the person I don't like to the government. and there will be consequences.
Yeah, he also tweeted that Congress needs to, you know, redo libel laws. You know,
yeah. He said, why don't the Washington politicians just change libel laws?
Right.
Oh, I don't know, because the Constitution, because of the First Amendment, because it's America. I don't know. You want to look into it? No, he doesn't. I've been saying it for 2 years. People think I'm saying it because I'm progressive, I'm biased, I don't like Donald Trump or whatever. No, he's never read the Constitution. He doesn't understand our form of government. He doesn't like our form of government. By the way, the op-ed writer also said, no, it's not just publicly, it's also privately, that he admires autocrats and dictators.
Yeah, of course. Duterte, Putin.
Kim Jong-un,
right. Until Kim Jong-un embarrasses him, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a fucking child.
And if you asked him what page of the Declaration of Independence is the Constitution, he would probably say, like, I don't know, 4 or 5.
Yeah, you know? He would say, no one knows the Declaration of Independence better than I do. It is on page 4. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. It's fake news. And you know what? I think that's the strongest page in the Constitution. The strongest. Okay.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah. He couldn't help himself, like his lawyer said in the Woodward book.
Right.
He's a fucking liar.
Right.
And I wouldn't put him in front. They went to Mueller and said, if he testifies in front of you, you're endangering national security because the rest of the world will know what he is. Quote, a goddamn dumbbell. That's what John Dowd said. Which is, thank you for having the same reaction I did. How is that not the best phrase ever spoken in politics?
Dumbbell.
A goddamn dumbbell.
That's good because I always sort of like John Dowd because he wrote the Pete Rose report, right? And so I was disappointed that he was working on.
He
came around.
See, this is another thing where I say things that are super obvious and everybody goes, oh, you don't know that. That's speculation, right? Okay. You don't quit the case of your life representing the president.
Right.
Unless there's something monumentally wrong.
Right.
Right? And the things that are monumentally wrong are the president's a pathological liar, which it turns out that was the case. He's totally fucking guilty, which was the case, right?
But and he's a dumbbell and he doesn't listen to you.
And he doesn't listen to you. Right. And it doesn't matter if you say it doesn't matter. All that's going to happen is you're going to get embarrassed. Him being guilty is actually the least of the problems. That's what lawyers do. They represent guilty people.
Sure.
That's okay. Innocent people, guilty people, whatever. The problem is he's not going to listen to you. And all he's going to do is embarrass himself and you. So get out while you still can, right? Yeah. The story of the Trump White House is the story of get out, right? There's like people come up to you and they're like, wait, don't I know you from somewhere?
Right. We'll move on to Annapolis. Did you hear the Trump, Kellyanne Conway, Bob Woodward audio of that conversation?
No.
It's really great. Everybody should listen to it. You should play it on the show tomorrow. It's because it's Woodward talking to Kellyanne, and she's like, because Trump, I guess, called Woodward and said, hey, you know, if I'd known, I don't know the timing on it, but book was done, right? Maybe not out, but done. You know, hey, how come you didn't give me a chance to talk? And Woodward was like, I tried, right? I tried to reach out. And he said, I talked to Kellyanne, for example, and I put in a formal request. And he goes, well, Kellyanne's right here. And then it's her trying to get out of being in trouble in front of the president on the phone. Like, you'll love hearing it. Because he's like, Kellyanne, you remember we went to lunch like 2.5 months ago and I asked you. And she goes, yep, we did. And I put in the request. Who else did you talk to? Who else did you ask? And he's like, well, I asked. She goes, Hope Hicks? And he's like, I talked to a lot of people. Like, he's in this conversation. Yeah. I got a name. He has a lot of people. She goes, yes, you ran up. So if I don't go through the protocol, they'll accuse me of not following protocol, you know? So we tried, you know, put it. And of course, it's like, it's the president of the United, I mean, obviously he knew Bob Woodward was writing a book about it. It's inconceivable that he doesn't know that.
So by the way.
So she's trying not to embarrass the president in front of the president and pawn it off on someone else because it is apparent now that she should have said, maybe you should talk to Bob Woodward.
Yeah.
And probably didn't.
Well, no. I take that completely opposite. First of all, let's just be clear. If your name starts with president, Bob Woodward's writing a book about you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay? That's right.
So you should already know that.
Right.
Okay. If it was a draft, which by the way, maybe we should. Draft people who the op-ed writer is.
Oh, okay. Right. And you think we'll find out like a Joe Klein?
Yeah, we'll eventually find out. It's Washington. There's no way we don't find out. Right. Okay. I don't mean tomorrow. I don't mean 6 months from now.
Maybe 2 years. Maybe yeah. 5 years. Whatever.
Yeah. But the time moves faster now. So
yeah,
maybe 3 months after Trump resigns.
Sometime after he's out of power. Yeah. Soon after. Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, if you're watching this on Sunday, which you, it might have already cut off for you. Anyway, but if you are, I think there's some percentage chance Trump has already resigned. And so you'll already be really deeply amused at this conversation. Okay, anyway, so my number one draft pick would be Kellyanne Conway.
Oh, that she wrote it.
That she wrote it.
There's a good argument to be made for that because the thing with her husband is weird.
Yes.
And noteworthy, right?
Super noteworthy. Yeah. That's not an accident. It's not an accident. Right. That he there's no way that I'm working, let's say it's this fantastical situation. I'm working for President Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And Wendy is nonstop tweeting, that some bitch Bernie Sanders. Yeah. I'm like, Wendy, what are you doing? That's crazy. Why do you keep tweeting?
Right, and you're
about
not
some bitch Bernie Sanders.
Right. You're not the associate secretary of labor for automotive statistics. Not that that's not an important job.
Well.
You're one of the top two or three counselors to the president.
Yeah.
You're with him.
No. That's a crumb trail so that she can turn back and go, of course I wasn't on his side, you knuckleheads. Look at my husband's tweets.
Right.
You think he did that without asking me?
Right. I felt like.
Right. That was me sending an SOS to the world.
I was afraid.
And when you knuckleheads didn't get it, I wrote the op-ed.
Right. Because you weren't getting it. Nobody was getting it. And I thought if I leave this job and Hope takes over or Corey takes over, that there'll be no one steering him, no one snatching those papers, no one when John Madden says to me, Kellyanne, we got to get the authorization for a first strike on North Korea. You got to get off his desk, mm-hmm. right?
Can't,
and so she's like, all right. Hey, look over there, man. That's a computer. Look at that. Yeah. Check out those squirrels. And then she takes
it. Yeah. Who would you take in the wraparound?
Oh, so is it just the two of us?
Apparently.
So you drafted Kellyanne.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll take Mike Pence because of Lodestar.
I know. I wanted Pence. I was thinking, is there any way he lasts in the fourth pick?
No, I would take Pence and I'd take Pence and I'd take Mad Dog Mattis.
God damn it! I was hoping you'd say John Kelly so I could say no. It's actually the Mad Dog in front of you. Now I'm stuck with goddamn John Kelly. Oh, this is going to be so good. Okay, however long from now, you have to come back to this old school episode. I've got Kellyanne Conway and John Kelly, and you with an excellent wraparound have Pence and Mad Dog Mattis.
All right, that'll be good.
Okay, so super duper last thing. Why?
Because also you have to remember, it has to be someone who goes to the New York Times quietly, right, and says, it can't be if it's an eighth or ninth tier person, I'm not sure the New York Times runs it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Or if they're not there anymore, like Rob Porter.
Oh, and they are.
They would have to say former.
They'd have to say former. So here you got to have it, and it has to be, he is a person indicting the President of the United States for some of the worst behavior.
No, the right. person who did it is the lodestar.
That's right. So it has to be. It has to be someone of great significance that the New York Times thinks. Okay, well, either his chief of staff, his secretary of defense, his top advisor, or who was our other choice, or his vice president.
Yeah.
Like these four. These are almost the only four people I imagine. And we're probably not thinking of somebody who the Times would permit that to.
You can make an argument for Stephen Miller. You can make an argument for Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
It's not either of them.
So, and it's not, but I had fun on the show today saying, could you imagine if it, not this, but later, that the Kingslayer is Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah.
She comes out in a press conference, her usual White House press conference, and goes, I hereby resign. The president is mentally unstable. You should use the 25th Amendment. Drop the mic.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
You know what would happen?
Nothing.
He'd be done. No. He'd be done.
Right.
No, that's too. She's too close to him. And
you're saying that the 20 minutes later, when Lindsey Graham says Sarah Huckabee Sanders doesn't know what she's talking about, Trump's a visionary leader, that still there would be time after that when other people would recognize that he has to go.
No, she's too close to him. People, if it was There's only like four or five at most people who can say that and be the Kingslayer.
I wonder how close she is to him. I mean, I don't know how much contact she has with him or whether her contact is with Kellyanne Conway and Bill Shine.
No, I rank her number one in most credible for conservatives to say, oh my God, if she said it, it must be true.
Because they
like
see
if
her.
It's Pence, all the Trump people be like, ah, he's just trying to be president.
Right.
John Kelly establishment, BS, we never liked him in the first place. And you just go down the list. But if Sarah Huckabee Sanders says, they'll be like, oh, okay, he's mentally unstable. We got to go. Let's go, 25th Amendment, right? Mm-hmm. But she's not going to do that. Okay, so the super duper last thing was that it moves the needle because of one random little thing in there, but it's so important. When he said Jeff Sessions was not mentally retarded, no one cares about this, especially if you're a Republican, okay? Real people like us care, like, hey, that's not cool, right? But Republican senators, they've said a lot worse, right? In the John McCain eulogies, they were like, and he was, you know, forward thinking enough that in the year 2002, he stopped using the word gook. That's a real story about John McCain. And people say it like positively. Like, not 1972 or 1982. 2002, okay.
Now, I mean, obviously, his circumstances make that particular slur less bothersome than literally anyone else on the planet.
Yeah, I got it. He got tortured by Asian people. We know, right? Okay, they happen to be Asian. That was this. I got it, right? But it's still really bad. But yeah, okay, but we get it. Yeah. You got tortured. Yeah, whatever. Okay, but but they don't care about the R word or whatever, right?
No.
So no, what they care is that he called him a dumb Southerner.
Dumb Southerner.
And so Johnny Isaacson and Richard Shelby had quotes today that I could sense their pens shaking as they wrote it.
Yeah.
They're like, if you want to know what my IQ is, look at the product of my fucking work, right?
Right.
Wait, I thought it was fake news.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? No, they believe it. They know it. They believe it. They know he said it.
Yeah, and they've been fighting against it because of jackasses like me and you their whole lives, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I don't agree with Richard Shelby and Johnny Isaacson about anything, but right. I bet they get passionate when people presume they're dumb because of their accent.
Yeah,
of
the part and of the Trump talked about the accent. Right. He has a dumb accent. He said he speaks like he's got marbles in his mouth, mm-hmm. and he's a dumb Southerner. Isaacs and Shelby were like, when do we fucking impeach? Okay, you wanna see a dumb Southerner, dumb motherfucker?
Right.
Okay, right? Let's go, let's dance. Okay, so he has burned one too many bridges.
Well, again, that's what I thought mostly listening. I disagreed with Smirkonish, but I thought, you know, again, the needle moves not when his numbers go from 40 to 36.
No.
His needle moves when Johnny Isaacson and Richard Shelby
get together at lunch and go, is it time?
What? Because at some point, what I don't get is one of them's going to go, it's not like Hillary becomes president.
Yeah, it's like Pence. They love Mike Pence.
It's as if they don't even understand how it works. As soon as Trump resigns, Mike Pence is president that minute. Now, yes, and you would lose a whole slew of Trump supporters who'd be furious until they, you know, went on with their lives and went on with their business and raised their kids.
No, they would get killed in the polls, but in the votes. But they might get killed anyway. So that's why my prediction that he's going to go before the midterms, not so bad, okay? Because if you're 45 days out from a midterm, and now all of a sudden you got your numbers back, and because of that dumbass Trump, you're sitting at 42%. And a cold sweat goes down your brow, right? And you're like, okay, I never liked the son of a bitch anyway. Right. And Pence is my boy, and I'm at 42%. What do I got to lose?
What do I have to lose? That's what I don't understand is why there's not a what do I have to lose moment. You and I both think that Mike Pence, I mean, I think Mike Pence would have, and I don't say this about a lot of people, because Hillary Clinton would have slaughtered Mike Pence.
Yeah,
Clinton would have slaughtered Mike Pence.
That's how bad Mike Pence
is. That's how bad a candidate for this era.
That's
Mike Pence. That might not have always been the case in 1988, Mike Pence beats Mike Dukakis, right? But in 2016, Mike Pence can't win.
100%. Yeah. So anyways, okay, so that's the politics. So the famous person who called in to vote in the poll. Did not call him, texted.
The non-poll.
Yeah, the non-poll, tyt.com/season, of course was Anna Kasparian, listening to the show.
Very
famous. She says, and this is the most non-surprising thing ever, how is this a debate? Winter sucks balls.
Thank you.
Spring means flowers. It's an appetizer to summer greatness.
And I mean, look, the Anna and I were never enemies, but I don't know, or anything close to it. But like, I don't know, 3 years ago, we did some sort of mind melt.
Yeah, you did. You went from like, to like, yes.
Well, I think more importantly, she went that way.
Yeah, that's right. Not you, her mainly.
Yeah. I just want to make it clear. I always liked her. I'm not sure she was like, I think there was a period of time where she was like, what's with Ben?
No. She talks about it on the show. Yeah. She talks about it on the postgame. Right. Yeah, that's believe me, no state secret. Okay.
All right, good.
She didn't have to go anonymous to write that op ed. Senior TYT official, writes,
right? What's with Ben?
Originally not sure about Ben.
Right.
Okay.
That's a kind way to put it.
Yeah. But I would argue, one, that Anna is fake news. Kidding, Anna, just calm down. No, she's enormously biased. And anybody, TYT, old school TYT fan knows she's biased. She hates winter with a burning hot passion.
She's lived her entire life in Los Angeles, California.
No, I know. She's experienced winter like 2.5 times, and once was in Arizona.
Right.
I'm not even kidding.
And experienced it for like, what, 5 days? I mean,
maximum, but her whole life, okay? Right. But every time it gets to like 41 degrees, she's like, what is this? This is the most miserable state anybody's ever been in. Like, she melts. She's like, yeah. So I discount her vote because she's way too biased against winter. Winter is a friend of mine, and I will not accept this. But more importantly, I think she proved my point.
Craig has evened the voting.
Okay.
Put on that.
Yeah, Craig, thank you. All of a sudden, 1-1, okay?
Spring is boring.
Spring is boring.
Your spring is the lead. Right.
Okay, so, and Anna accidentally proved my point because she said spring's the appetizer to summer. Well, what the hell's an appetizer?
Oh,
No, wait a minute. I withdraw that comment.
I was going to say. I would have won that with the judge right away. Did you not say?
Withdrawn, Your Honor. Withdrawn. Okay. No, let me explain.
All right.
Okay. You're out of order. Okay. Yesterday, so we order food between shows because I live on air, right? Okay. So regular show ends, special election coverage begins, and we were ordering from like Mediterranean food. I ordered 3 appetizers, no entree.
Right.
So you're not gonna out appetizer me.
No one in the world can possibly get up. You are the worst person in the world to say what's an appetizer.
No,
the only reason you go to a restaurant.
That's right. Yeah. One thing better than an appetizer is an hors d'oeuvre. That's an old school rule. Okay. But when you say something is the appetizer to something else, you're saying that it's the second fiddle, which goes towards proving my point.
It doesn't prove your point. It merely proves that spring is not as good as summer, which we've already established.
Right. Now, I get it.
And or fall, which follows it. So it is an appetizer to the great things, not the thing that comes there. I'm resting my case.
Okay, well, wait a minute. What happened?
Because winter comes at the end of the things that we acknowledge are 1 and 2, which is just the worst. Like the time of year that you care about most is over and it won't be back for 6 months. That is a downer. Whereas spring is like, hey, get ready, it's coming.
I hear you. The flip side is, you know who's there to comfort you in that downtime?
The mall?
First of all, yes. Second of all, Santa.
Here's the other
Santa
thing.
Santa is gonna give you the warmest hug you've ever had.
I'm gonna tell. No, I don't like commercialism, and I don't. And also,
I like how you're outlibbing me on that.
But I really don't. It bothers the hell. And I guess having a kid is what changed it. Like, you know,
you have to constantly get them presents.
We're in the airport yesterday in Salt Lake, and she's like, I promised Josie a present, so we bought her. And I'm like, why? She has things. Like we don't
a million things.
She has a million things. You know, we're coming back. We haven't seen her in 5 days. 2 days before she went to school, we're the worst parents, and we. So we got her a pen that had a little a dog on it, mm-hmm. like a little floppy little dog cover, mm-hmm. right? And then we walk 10 feet and there's a toy store. And Lee's like, oh, we made such a mistake. There's all these things here. And she walks in and she was, oh, what about this? What about this? And I was awesome. No.
Yeah.
No, it's done. We paid $5.99 for the dog pen. That's it. Just know the store was here.
Yeah. No, I did this with my nephews growing
that
up.
That makes it seem like my wife couldn't overrule me. She, of course, could have bought anything she wanted.
Yeah, of course, yeah. of course. Yeah.
But she didn't, God bless.
No, I mean, with my wife, if I said, no, we're not buying this, she'd be like, okay, great, now I'm buying seven things. Okay.
Oh, wait, can I tell a shopping story in the airport?
Yeah, of course.
So we were on the way to flying to this film festival in beautiful Telluride, Colorado, the most beautiful place in America, right? And so we're in the Salt Lake Airport then too. And I wanted to buy, you know, you're eating crappy food and I really wanted to buy gum. So I go in to buy gum, which costs, I don't know, $1.99 or $2.99, depending on the size of the gum you're buying. I put that on the thing to buy the gum. And I realized, oh, I want to get a magazine. And I thought, I was like, you have a magazine, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're silly with magazines. She's like, I want to get a book. And I'm like, you got books on your Kindle. She's like, I've read them all. There's 400 books on the Kindle. Inconceivable. I'm like, find one you haven't read. Like, we got it on the Kindle. That's what I'm thinking. I don't really say it. I say that about her. So she runs to get a magazine. She throws down, like, Us Weekly because, you know, you're on a plane. I got it. She wants to, like, oh, I'm going to get, you know. And then she throws down the Harvard Business Review, right?
So nobody at Harvard reads the Harvard Business
Review. Do you know how much the Harvard Business Review is?
Oh my God, it's probably astronomical. Is it like
$18.95?
I was gonna guess $19.99.
I was gonna buy gum.
You should have let me guess.
Gum. I was gonna buy gum. It was $2. And then I got to pay Us Weekly for $5.99. Okay, and Harvard was $27 just because I wanted to get gum. That's what's wrong with America. That's what's wrong with marriage. I love my wife. Okay.
And that's why spring beats winter.
That's why spring beats winter. Jesus. Okay. Harvard Business Review. So then on the way back, I'm like, she tried to buy a book on the way back. Not going to let that happen. So I and then I'm like, why don't you read your Harvard Business Review? And she's like, I already read it. And I was like, bullshit, you read that.
No way. I get it. No, let me, please. I was going to predict this 2 minutes ago. Yeah. She read one article. Because just to say she read Harvard Business Review.
So she said, we're walking, and I go, name.
By the way, because that's what I would do.
She said, okay. She said, name, one, I go, name one thing you read. Say one thing you read in it, right? And she, because first of all, the main article that she was interested in, I found instantly online, right? Which was free. Right.
Okay.
I said, name one article, and she was like starting to make jokes, and I'm like, you're joking around and you're making fun of me, but you're joking because you can't name one article because you haven't read it because it's the Harvard Business Review. So you just took $20 and you were like, puh.
Yeah. So she hadn't even read one.
Of course, yes. She would deny it, but she's read nothing. I bet she left it in Colorado. I bet she didn't even bring it back. $27 for gum is what I paid.
Okay. Materialism. If you know why? Because everybody in America is buying too many Harvard Business Reviews.
That's the problem.
You know what? I was thinking of getting my kids' Harvard Business Review for Christmas. Not doing it anymore.
How can you call yourself a magazine and charge $18.95? By the way, as I think back, it might have been $23.95. I'm not sure. It was either $1.05 below 20 or 25. It's not. You can't put that in the magazine rack. That goes in the book. That goes with hardbacks.
Yeah. So my nephews knew this, and my kids know it too. So they'll be in a store, and they'll say, "Baba, Baba, Baba, can I buy this?" And I'm like, "What do you think I'm going to say?" They're like, "No." So it's no every time.
Yeah. Right.
And
yeah.
So you know that beats
except
it out
for,
of them.
Except for like a legitimate treat. Like to me, and which really means a treat that I liked and I desperately want her to like.
Oh, that's interesting. No, lately what I've done is, okay, you know what? I'm amending it to, I'll buy you books. And then you have to read
them. I'll buy books if we want. Sure, yeah.
Right. But
although I'm still tempted to say we have books. We already have a book.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you go ask my kids, will your dad buy you a toy? They will tell you immediately. No.
Yeah, I like books.
Okay. Once you train him in the art of no, okay, then you're okay. Because they look at you like in the store like, God damn it. Okay, and they're like, Mom. Okay.
Well, like Lee wanted, she said we'd buy Josie a gift. And I was like, she's got gifts. And then you go to these film festivals, they give you these swag bags with all this free stuff. And I'm not knocking them. It's great. But it's not really anything you need. Unless you're big drinkers. Mm-hmm. But you and I are big drinkers, so. Like, they give you wine, you can't travel with it. But they gave us portable, like, wine glasses. Like, that seems dangerous, but, and we were like, we did a great thing. We were like, we're leaving these here. We're leaving them for the cleaning people.
Yeah.
They're nice.
Totally
they're new.
Agree.
But I got no interest in this. I don't need it. And, or water bottles, tons of water bottles. We have tons of water bottles. Mm. But we could have brought Josie one of those. Like, hey, look, a new water bottle, a portable wine cup. She would have been like, fantastic. This is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
That's right. They
and it
would have
been free. That's right.
They don't know.
No, they don't know. You know why? They're five. They're idiots.
So the only person I can't say no to, although she would vigorously dispute this, is my wife. Because if I say no to her, it's going to be 3X. Whatever it is, it's going to be 3X. So the savvier move is to say, of course, honey.
Oh, no, you're right.
Right. Yeah. And then, like, try to talk around it, change the topic, whatever. But get out of town, get out of Dodge, because no is not the correct
Thankfully,
answer.
Thankfully, God bless. Every no that I was giving on this with my wife just made her laugh. So it was good. It was a nice time.
Yeah.
But there's no way. There's no way. And I know she listens to Old School. But, honey, you didn't read Harvard Business Review. I know it. You know it. The American people know.
Yeah. Well, and if you did read it, you know what? Somebody should turn Ben into the government, okay? Because that's libel, treason. Okay. But I stopped my mom. I stopped myself from telling my mom to stop getting presents for the kids. She wants to get them a present every single time she sees them. Mm-hmm, every single time. Right? But then they moved to LA for 6 months, and still every time.
You mean like Thursday, and then again Monday?
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. And then I realized, it isn't for the kids, it's for her.
That's right. Yeah.
Because if they like have a flicker of enjoying the present, she's like, yes!
Right,
that's right. She feels so happy, I can't take that away from her. Okay.
Also, I want to take advantage of that. Like, Christmas comes in the most un-American of seasons, and and the kids are overwhelmed by gifts from everybody else. I mean, Josie would get 17 gifts at Christmas, I'm sure, like your kids, if we got them nothing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
17 gifts is too many.
I literally get them nothing.
You get them, right. You get four gifts at Christmas. I mean, I say this all the time, every movie made before 1950, every kid in every movie made before 1950 has one toy.
Yeah.
They play it, they roll it along on the ground. Hey, Johnny, put your toy away, it's dinner time. Don't forget to put on your single pair of shoes.
Yeah, because we didn't have money. Okay, so we're about to run out of time, I'm afraid. So I'm going to, but I'm going to power through a bunch of stories because I promised them to you, okay? We might not get to the state though. Okay, so lips. So this is amazing.
Lips?
My lips.
Oh, you have a
couple of weeks ago, you told a story about how you burned the inside of your mouth with a.
Burned my lip, outside of my lip.
Yeah, burned your lip. He burned his lip. It was not a cold sore. He burned his lip with a dumpling.
The dumpling, the boiling bouillon from the back of the dumpling burst out. The boiling bouillon burst out.
Right.
And singed my lip.
Right. That is not what happened to me.
Hmm?
I got a cold sore. Okay. So it's funny because in that episode of Old School, we talked about how I was like, I've never had a cold sore. Isn't that amazing?
Wow. So you got one right.
Right. So you know what? So it turns out, and this is why we need to do the show because it's a public service. The jinx is real.
Hmm.
There is such a thing as jinxing yourself. At the age of fucking 48, after saying I've never gotten a cold sore, I magically, mysteriously, for no goddamn reason, get a cold sore.
Yeah, you know who's to blame for your cold sore.
The deep state?
Your children. Almost certainly. They put their hands, they are filled with disease, and they put their hand in your mouth.
You think so?
Yeah, and then you have a cold sore.
You know what? I was looking for someone to blame.
No, blame your kids. Okay. I think it's that Joy.
Yeah, that Joy character.
Yeah, I don't trust her. I never did.
She's yeah, with all her bullshit cuteness, right?
And Baba this, Baba that. She knows that we're dead.
She just thinks, oh, Baba's cuter.
Yeah,
that'll get him.
Right,
okay.
Right, that'll get him.
Yeah, so you know two things about her real quick. So now she's picked up one of my things. And so she goes, hey, we should go out and get breakfast, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's
I'm
good.
Like, okay, all right, fine, whatever. You want a present? Fuck it, I'll give you a present. That's too cute.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. And you mentioned Josie's first day of school. Joy came home from her first day of school in kindergarten, not preschool, kindergarten. And that's the elementary school the pro is in. It's with everybody in there. And she's like, Baba, I didn't cry in my first day of grown-up school. Oh, come on.
So today we had a little parent, like our school has the parent, bring the school, first 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week, they just go for 2 hours and you come too. You're not, then you mingle with the other parents there in school and then you all go home together. And then mm-hmm. Monday.
You go home with the parents?
Yeah, we go home with the parents.
The key thing?
Yeah, it's totally. Yeah. There were some cute parents there.
Yeah.
So it's nice. So I was talking to a friend last night. And they were like, I write my kid. And I'm like, my daughter can't read. There's no point in writing something. But So I drew her a picture. They had to draw a picture of me, like, looking down over her. And I drew some hearts and everything. And I was like, put this in your thing. And if you're ever scared at anything, you can just look at this. You know I'm watching you. If you ever need to, just call wherever I am. I'll just come get you. You're not going to need it. But... Mm. And
she doesn't have a cell phone, does she?
No.
Okay.
But I presume it's not, it's not a prison. If she has to make a phone call, they'll probably call me. For the amount of money we pay, I think they can let my kid use the phone.
Or if it was a prison, they'd be like, no, you can call your dad for $19.99.
That's right.
The price of a Harvard Business Review, you can make a call to your dad.
So today, she has her 2 hours, then we all go to lunch, and she's holding my hand on the sidewalk, and she had a great time. She had a great 2 hours. She was the last kid crying for us not to go, and then an hour and a half later, when she came through where the parents were, she was just overjoyed. And she were holding hands on the sidewalk, and she looked up at me, and she went, Ben, I didn't need the note. I didn't need the picture.
Yeah, there you go. God bless America.
I didn't get her a goddamn present, though.
No, of course not. Don't be ridiculous. Okay, so back to the lips. So is there, I had a good moment with the Colster. Two things happened with the Colster. You'll enjoy this because it's a perfect description of how mental I am. So I'm like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck is this? And then first I thought maybe it was a zit or something. Right. And then I'm like, this is a pretty aggressive zit. It's like multiplying, right? And then I'm like, there's something wrong with this. It's a thing, thing. And Wendy at dinner was like, here, let me Google it. And then she showed me a picture of a Colster. I'm like, that's what it is.
That's what it is. Yeah.
But that's only 100% what it is.
That's right.
Okay. And then I'm like, then I'm pissed, and it's like fucking boom, boom.
Yeah, it drops.
Boom.
Yeah. It's hot.
It is, and it's just gross in a thousand different ways. And at the height of it, I was at my sister's house in New Jersey. I'm looking at it in the mirror, and I go, wait a minute, I got it. I'm gonna savor it. Is there some chance that this is the last Colster I ever get? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna soak it in. Okay, I'm like, look, it's like throbbing. It's a thing. It's like, okay, it's on my face. It's weird. I keep looking at it. You can't help but look at it, like 85 times a day.
Right.
Right. You know what? I got a Colster.
Did that work?
Yeah, it did. Okay, I was like, I'm gonna soak it because you know what? One day I won't have a Colster, and I'm like, well, there's not that weird thing on my face.
Right.
It was kind of like an interesting
entity. Did you take a good picture of it so you can always remember?
Nope, I didn't. Please, Ben, I didn't get that weird. Okay.
Is it covered in makeup a little bit now?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, for the show. I'm like, because, we have to put, I have to put makeup on, otherwise my head shines like crazy, right? Mm-hmm. So I put some foundation on, please. But for this, I was like, but they noticed yesterday on the show, on YouTube, I went through like 12 comments, and only one out of 12 that I read was like, is that a Colster jinx? Right? So which leads me to the main point of why I brought it up, other than the jinx.
Did you do is this the herpes conversation or no?
Yeah. So there is no two words that are as disparate in the English language that describe the same thing as cold sore
and herpes.
Right? One is, man, it's a cold sore. What's cold sore. No big deal. Okay, hey, you got a cold sore. Good on you, buddy, or whatever. Yeah, right?
Put some Campo Finico on it, it'll feel better.
Yeah. Ooh, that's herpes.
Jack has herpes.
I don't want to say anything, but that dude has herpes on his face. Herpes is like the worst word. Colster is totally benign.
And
it's literally the same thing.
That's right. It's just their simplexes are different. But I don't even remember what the simplex difference are.
Yeah, I think we looked it up last time we were talking about it or whatever. They say it's the same thing, but it's obviously not the same thing because one is on your face, the other one's on your cock. One is a venereal disease, and it's a real issue.
That's right.
The other one is like this weird thing you get, and ISOCIN the rest of your hate,
But you can get the thing that's a venereal disease on your face also.
But all it does is it's just this annoying kind of cold sore and then it goes away. Right. It's not a thing. Who cares?
No, that's right. Yeah.
Right? Like, it's annoying, but other than that, and if you're on camera like I am, people are like, what the fuck? Does he have herpes on his face? But other than that, it's no. But if I had it on my penis, I'd be like, ah! Like, if you said, hey, Jake, you want to soak that one in? I'd be like, no. That one we're not soaking
in. Not going to celebrate that one as much, yeah.
And it's funny, though, like, it waited. You know, I don't know when I got it. I don't know if it was my kids. I don't know if it was something I did. Like, one of my friends is like, oh, I know. It's New Orleans when you kiss those 23 women in one night, coming back to bite you. Yeah. Like, how long have you held that in your back pocket?
Right, totally. Yeah, totally. Although, yeah, so I think I mentioned before, I had a thing on my nose that showed up. And when I got very sick in South Carolina, and there were things all over my tongue, and I lost like 12 pounds.
Let me guess, another dumpling.
Right. I had a lot of dumplings. I had a virus. I did have a virus. And the guy came and he said, and then it was on my, and my nose was inflamed. My nose was disgusting, right? I didn't go out. I didn't leave the house I didn't do the show for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said, yeah. And, you know, he's like, you have cold sores. He goes, it's herpes. And I was like, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, he's like 71% of fourth graders in Philadelphia have it. He goes, uh-huh. It just doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. It means nothing. You have not been with an untoward person. You have not, he goes, nothing has happened. Your immune system was weakened and you came into contact with this and it could happen in 1,000 ways.
Yeah.
So just take a deep breath.
Like everything else in the world, in reality, it's stress, right?
That's right. That was
You know, 70% of the time, people think it's 95%. It's not. It's 70% of the time. It's triggered by stress.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. And I've been super stressed, so I'm not surprised.
Stress and hookers.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's why we're going with stress.
That's right, yeah.
Look, you've got your dumpling. I've got my stress.
That's right.
Okay? Yeah, right. And let's just leave it at that.
Oh, my God. I still, the dumpling, I mean, thank God. Again, my wife was right there. It was such a gift.
Yeah.
A gift.
Otherwise, she's like, oh, yeah, we were at a casino, and you got that from a dumpling.
Also, she went away.
Is that a nickname you gave her?
Like she'd been away on her own for 2 weeks there in Pennsylvania. I was there at the beginning, and then I came back to see her. If I'd come back, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you have some on my lip. Yeah, it would have been great. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's how you know that in my case, it wasn't an untoward woman.
Untoward, right.
There's no way I'm unsavvy enough to have this conversation on air if it was a woman. Here's what happens if it was a woman. I never talk about it.
That's right.
Like, I never bring it up.
That's
people
right.
say, hey, is that a cold sore in your face? I go, oh, yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. And then end the conversation, move on. Okay? Because the more you talk about it, the more chance you're going to be exposed.
But you could go, I cut myself shaving, and then I cut myself shaving again and again and again and again. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. I would say it's a cold sore. I would say, but I would immediately but calmly end the conversation or change the topic. Because if you're caught in a lie, or you're in a situation where you have to lie, this is my rule on lying, okay? Be as quick as possible. Mm. I might be in the opposite school as you.
No, I agree. If you're actually lying,
No details, no nothing. Just get out of the conversation. Because the longer you're in the conversation, the more chance you have of screwing up.
I'm going to get the line wrong. I'm going to butcher it wrong from the incredibly underrated Tequila Sunrise.
Oh, thank you. That's an American that understands how underrated Tequila Sunrise
is. With Raul Julia, Mel Gibson, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Kurt Russell.
Yeah, oh my God, that's so funny. I forgot Kurt Russell was in the movie, and I was going to say, it's as underrated as Tombstone.
Ah, I met.
And you know, that there is something about Kurt Russell that smacks of underrated movie, with the notable exception of Big Trouble in Little China.
Tequila, I like Big Trouble in Little China. But I mean, Tango and Cash.
Sujay made me watch it too many times.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think you need a repeat viewing of.
I lived in Washington with two friends, one of whom was obviously named Sujay. There was no Saturday afternoon that would go by when Sujay would not find Big Trouble in Little China on TV somewhere and make me watch it. So I've had enough of that.
I'm going to see if the line is in here if I remember enough of it. No.
So the only thing you choose in life is friends.
Here it is. Okay, yeah. as Raul Julie said, so Mel Gibson like is explaining either like why he's at the house or why he was not there on time. Yeah, I just had to run out. No, I just went out because the generator broke and the lights went out. The backup generator wasn't working. You know the new backup generators they have, they last a lot longer. So I ran out to get that. And then on the way back, there was some traffic and I thought I'd get a coffee. And Raul Julia says, you go to a good deal of trouble to explain an inconsequential event.
Bingo. Yeah. Does it have his other quote there about friends? You can't choose family. You can't choose anything else. The only thing you can choose is friends in life.
I don't know what it is about going to high school with someone that makes you feel you're automatically friends for life. Who says friendship lasts forever? We'd all like it to, maybe, but maybe it just wears out like everything else, like tires. There's just so much mileage in them, and then you're riding around on nothing but air. That's not it, right?
No, that's not it. No, that's that kind of the opposite, actually. So anyway, when Raul Julia died, I was really broken up because I loved that line of his.
You son of a bitch, how can you do this? Friendship is the only thing in life you can make that's yours. You can't choose your family, goddammit. I've had to face that. No man should be judged for whatever direction his penis goes. That's like blaming a compass for pointing north. For Christ's sake, friendship is all we have. We chose each other. How could you F it up? How could you make us look so bad?
That's such a great line.
Great line. Robert Towne.
Who wrote it?
Yeah. Wrote and directed it, yeah. Okay. That movie's underrated. And I met the niece of the writer of Tombstone at the He's passed on. But
there's no way that you rewatch Tombstone and don't enjoy it, unless there's something a little
What's the line exactly to Billy Bob Thornton? You're going to say something, or you're just going to stand there and bleed?
Yeah. You're gonna stand there and bleed all day, or you're gonna do something.
Oh, it's the other way around.
Yeah, but I'm sure I got it slightly wrong.
Yeah.
Sit there and bleed all day, or you're gonna do something about it.
Turns out, bleed all day.
Yeah, and every Kurt Russell line in that movie is awesome. Tell him I'm coming, and I'm bringing hell with me. With his like mustache quivering.
I told her that the only problem with Tombstone, which is you're gonna do something or just stand there and bleed.
That's what it is.
Yeah. You know, do something or just stand there and bleed. Is the when they ride at the end, that montage is not consistent with the rest of the movie. They like montage to show them rounding up or killing a bunch of the guys in the Klan gang, and it's like oh crap, we're headed for 240. We got to bring this in 222. Just do it in a montage.
Oh, and
it's a weak
montage.
Yeah,
yeah. I didn't bother thinking about it that much because it was Tombstone. But there's a lot of great lines. Like, there's lines that I still quote in there. And now that the movies I watch are so old that millennials look at me like, what? So every once in a while, I'll say, I'll be your Huckleberry.
Right? Yeah.
And 21-year-olds are like, what?
They have no idea.
I don't get it. What does that mean? Anyway, back to Smirkonish. So.
Back to Smirkonish.
Obviously. Back then he was a conservative before he went on his, I am such a moderate, I have a fervent moderate route. I think it's all a shtick. So, but back then he was a conservative.
Well, the show opens with Stuck in the Middle with You. It's so annoying. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that song. I don't like Smirkonish using it. In fact, I'm thinking of wrestling.
But again, it suggests, in another time, it suggests that the middle is really a good, safe place. And to them, always the most radical people then keep moving the middle. And then because you're in the middle, you're like, well, sometimes, I mean, Steve Bannon has some good things to say about some things. I don't agree with everything he says.
Yeah. No, ironically, the middle is for wussies. So I don't really believe that because it depends.
It depends. We're at a time now where you'd like in this critical juncture where you want to say to people who claim to have principles, Bob Corker, Jeff Flake, Ben Sasse, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, hey man, pick a side.
Yeah.
You can go back to voting for tax cuts later, right? But right now, we got to pick a side.
Please, it's classy Ben Sasse. Okay.
Is his name Sasse?
No, it's Sasse. Classy Ben Sasse sounds too good to not say.
Right.
I use the word wussy because that's Smirkonish. Used to complain about the wussification of America.
Oh, okay.
And he kept calling liberals wussies, basically. So I wrote an op-ed in Huffington Post, which nearly got me banned, where I wrote, all right, Michael Smirkonish, if you're such a tough guy, all right, let's fight. Okay.
Doesn't sound like you.
No, because you say liberals are wussies. So, but I'll take it either way. We can do a debate. Okay, I prefer a debate because right. I would destroy you in a debate. Or we could go a round of fisticuffs. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not going to assault you in the middle of the road or anything like that. We'll put on gloves or whatever, whatever rules you'd like. And do I really want to fight you? Not really, but. But if you're going to keep calling liberals wussies, then
I'm going to do
then
it.
Then I will punch you in the face. Okay, under normal rules and regulations, right. Et cetera, right?
Queens, whatever those
right.
are.
Right, Queens rules or whatever, right? He complained to mommy. He called Arianna Huffington. He threatened me. Can you please kick him off of the of Huffington Post? Wait. I thought there was a wussification of America. What's going on, big tough guy? Right.
Don't tell on people unless they've done something wrong.
If the article was unhinged, I was like, I will find you.
Right. But I mean, it's the difference between the blacklist and naming your friends, even when they go, hey man, well, here's a list of 20 people. We already have their name. Just read this list and you can go back to work. Yeah. You're participating in it, right? You're doing it then, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the guys who made the wrong decision did. And then Ilia Kazan makes this movie On the Waterfront, which is one of the great movies of the 1950s, maybe of the whole back half of the 20th century, and where the guy who names names is the hero because the people who he named were murderers.
Because they were actual bad guys.
They were actual bad guys, so yeah. So then it's okay, but Spurkonish told on you, he's an informant. He's a rat like Trump does. Right, the other people are... Oh my God, I've found massive corporate malfeasance at Arthur Andersen, right?
Yeah.
I better let people know because Enron has created fake money. Enron is going to go under and cost all these people their jobs and cost all these people their pensions. That person is not an informant. That person is not a rat. That person is seeking justice.
Is a whistleblower.
That's right.
Mommy, please protect me is not a whistleblower.
No.
Okay. No. So anyway, but you know, it's all fun and games to me, right? And by the way, I would not have written that today because today we're in a different environment where it's not fun and games and there are actual crazy people around saying, I will come and get you, right? Yeah. So, but back then it was a proverbial challenge, right? Mm-hmm. And but I never begrudge Smirkonish for crying, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I hear wussies do. Okay. No, and I don't hate Smirkonish. I'm just amused by his neutrality and his bald head and how boring he is. And so.
Right, but you don't, good thing you don't begrudge.
No, I don't. I really don't. Like, I actively dislike many people. But Smirkonish is not in them. I have amused disinterest in Smirkonish. But I like the fact that he's still afraid of me.
I don't know whether he is, but he is. That show is unbelievably safe.
That's why I'm amused this interest.
Like, it is just every show on the Julie Mason too, who I sort of like. But it is, you know, you'd have more issue because they were frequently dismissive of, you know, that Bernie bro line got used a lot, you know.
No. Let's get back in the ring, motherfucker.
They are very, 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 very establishment. I listen to that and I know precisely what the establishment, even though that's not a powerful show, that's what they
were. The Smirkonishes of the world, not him in particular, because he's too boring to care too much about. I can't stand their attitude of like, oh, please, Bernie Sanders trying to look out for the average American. No, it will not stand.
Yeah, but it wouldn't even be that.
It will not do.
Right, it'd be like, oh, Bernie, yeah, right, pay college. Who's going to pay for that?
Let's start another war. Okay, all right, last thing real quick. Smirkonish, I loved your idea of me challenging him to wrestling because that would have been so much funnier. Come on, Smirkonish, let's go. I'm going to wrestle you, okay? Come on. Oh, the fireman! Could you imagine, like, two good? You know how Jimmy Kimmel and Ted Cruz did the basketball challenge? That's good. That's mm-hmm. a solid, excellent challenge, right? Like, if some weird host challenged another guy to wrestling,
it'd be great.
And then they agreed to do it, and they put on the wrestling outfits.
Did you? We got to go. Did you see the video of our friend who confronted us, Alex Jones, and
with Marco Rubio? Yeah, we did it on the show. Right?
I was curious, really quick. Because I'm trying to figure out what you're supposed to do if you're Marco Rubio. What are you supposed to
There's
do?
No winning. It's like wrestling a homeless man. Like, there's no winning. Like, oh, I fought a home run stand and I punched him in the face. No, you didn't win.
But you keep talking, you keep over talking, you keep aggressively talking. I think that in a world, I want people to use their ideas and have conversations. I do. But it would have been okay if Marco Rubio to take his jacket off and go, hey man, you keep interrupting me, you're antagonizing me. Do you want to fight?
Right.
He wouldn't have.
I know, but in essence, Ben, that's kind of what I did.
Right.
And then, but then what happens? There's no winning. Oh my God, I can't believe you did that.
Right,
and
heroically, you were pulled back from fighting by a friend.
I think I know that friend. All right, guys, much love. We'll see you next time.